This week, a national news magazine, Look, devotes its feature article to the title, Welfare, Is It a Scandal? Unless there be any doubt that the intended answer is affirmative, the editors have highlighted and centered five two-line incidents which symbolize the scandal into which welfare has, in their eyes, fallen. In California, a salesman collected $820 in jobless pay over 21 weeks, although he was earning $88 a week as a salesman. In Oklahoma, 125 women, each of whom had eight or more illegitimate children, drew aid to dependent children grants. In Washington, D.C., a husband and wife team collected $1,650 in unemployment compensation, although they were fully retired federal employees on a monthly pension of $480. In New York City, a woman collected relief checks while hiding a hypodermic needle on her person. For 2 years, she used relief money to buy narcotics. Five, throughout the nation, a large number of people drew doubled Social Security benefits by fraudulently using two names and two account numbers. Now, I have no way of checking the accuracy of these charges, nor do I know their gravity. But this much is certain, that more Americans are debating our public assistance programs more seriously and less sympathetically than before, and at least in our recent past. The author of this Look article speaks of an almost visible wave of resentment rising across our nation against the cheats and the frauds who draw their substance and subsistence off of America's expanding relief program. And his own article is surely typical of this wave of resentment. Focus and symbol of this warfare on our welfare programs is the small Hudson River town of Newburgh, New York. Population, 31,000. 5 months ago, Mr. Joseph Mitchell, the city manager, and four of five of the city councilmen published a new 13-point Get Tough program designed, in their own words, to prevent any continued skyrocketing of relief costs, designed to relieve their city's roles of a legion of drifters and loafers and ne'er-do-wells whom they claimed were drawing unfairly subsistence money from the public treasury. This is the Newburgh program. One, all cash payments which can be converted to food and clothing and rent vouchers and the like without basic harm to the intent of the aid shall be issued in voucher form. Two, all able-bodied adult males on relief of any kind who are capable of working are to be assigned to the chief of building maintenance for work assignment on a 40-hour week. Three, all recipients physically capable of and available for private employment who are offered a job but refuse it, regardless of the type of employment involved, are to be denied relief. Four, all mothers of illegitimate children are to be advised that should they have any more children out of wedlock, they shall be denied relief. Five, all applicants for relief who have left a job voluntarily, that is, who have not been fired or laid off, shall be denied relief. Six, the allotment for any one family unit shall not exceed the take-home pay of the lowest city employee with a family of comparable size. Also, no relief shall be granted to any family whose income is in excess of the latter figure. 7. All files of all aid to dependent children cases are to be brought to the office of the Corporation Council for monthly review. All new cases of any kind will be referred to the Corporation Council prior to certification of payment. 8. All applicants for relief who are new to the city must show evidence that their plans in coming to the city involved a concrete offer of employment, similar to that required of foreign immigrants. All such persons shall be limited to 2 weeks of relief. Those who cannot show evidence shall be limited to 1 week of relief. 9. Aid to persons except the aged, blind, and disabled shall be limited to 3 months in any 1 year. 10. All recipients who are not disabled, blind, ambulatory, or otherwise incapacitated shall report to the Department of Public Welfare monthly for a conference regarding the status of their case. 11. Once the budget for the fiscal year is approved by the Council, it shall not be exceeded by the Welfare Department unless approved by Council for supplemental appropriation. 12. There shall be a monthly expenditure list on all categories of welfare aid. This monthly expenditure limit shall be established by the Department of Public Welfare at the time of presenting the budget and shall take into account seasonable variations. 13. Prior to certifying or continuing any more aid to dependent children cases, a determination shall be made as to the home environment. If the home environment is not satisfactory, the children in that home shall be placed in foster care in lieu of welfare aid to the family's adults. This is the Newburgh program. What could not be forecast when this program was published was the éclat of national acclaim and approval. News magazines called it important, courageous, a necessary antidote to the pious sentimentality of current welfare practices. One of our local newspapers editorialized in its favor. Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona was especially delighted. This was concrete evidence of his philosophy. He hoped, he said, that cities throughout America would adopt this program. He was tired of seeing professional chiselers walking up and down the streets out of work and with no intentions of going to work. He did not like to see his tax money being spent on children born out of wedlock. What are the facts? Should every community, including our own, adopt such a program as this? Are there a legion of chiselers and ne'er-do-wells, of social parasites, feeding endlessly off of our welfare funds? Is this a constructive program to improve the welfare levies and the welfare policies of our city? Certainly the most popular of all the programs included in these 13 points is the one that insists that all able-bodied men on relief shall go to work. No one likes to think that his hard-earned tax money is being used to allow others to remain in indolence, however niggardly may be the sums on which they can loll about. But actually, there is nothing new in this provision. Federal law and state law in New York State have long since required that caseworkers who dispense the public relief money shall erase from welfare lists any and all who can be shown to be chiseling and parasitical and who have no intentions of trying to become self-supporting. And one wonders if a man works a full day each day of the week when he will be able to go around to the employment offices and to answer ads in the newspapers, and if such a provision carried out will not in effect keep men and women on relief rolls longer than heretofore. What is unique in the Newburgh program are these two provisions. All recipients physically capable of and available for private employment who are offered a job but refuse it, regardless of the type of employment involved, are to be denied relief. And all applicants for relief who have left a job voluntarily, that is, who have not been fired or laid off, shall be denied relief. Either you come to work for me for substandard wages, or I will see to it that you are stricken from the relief rolls. Either you accept a 50% cut in your wages, or I will see that it is impossible for you to be included on relief rolls. One need not be by nature cynical to presume a measure of self-interest in these two provisions. Newburgh is a city of small shops and small stores. Most of these shops and stores do not meet the basic requirements of the Federal Minimum Wage Control Acts. What will an employee do who is faced between having too little and having nothing at all? Between tightening his belt and starvation? What recourse does he have? Is this truly a positive step forward in meeting the relief and human needs of our cities? And when Newburgh turned its scrutiny, the scrutiny of its police and the scrutiny of its commissioners on all the cases under review, not a single case of fraud or of graft was found among the 900 on its city rolls. And if Newburgh is a microcosm, a miniature of our nation as a whole, are we not bound to extrapolate and to say that though the poor have their prodigal as well as the rich, that there are surprisingly few ne'er-do-wells on public relief monies, and that our welfare agencies and agents have long since eliminated from the rolls those whom they were able to find? And of all the cases reviewed by Newburgh, only one able-bodied man was found sufficiently strong to push a lawnmower before the city hall. Is there a reservoir of strong, willing, and able workers so shiftless and so indolent that they are unwilling to take employment if such is offered to them? Newburgh's history would make one feel that the case is somewhat other. And let us look further. The second most popular provision of this Newburgh program is the one which would erase from the rolls of the relief any mother of an illegitimate child who subsequently has another child. All of us are concerned with the rising rate of illegitimacy in the United States. It is rising at the rate of some 25% each decade. But it is rising in each and every economic class. And one wonders if the starvation of the innocent children is a humane solution to a serious social problem. And one wonders, too, if there is not an element of racial discrimination implicit in this provision. A white mother who bears an illegitimate child need not carry for long the burden of that child. There is a call for adoption for such children. But the Negro mother, the Puerto Rican mother, the Indian mother who bears such a child must throughout her days carry this burden with her. There is no market for the adoption of colored children. Shall we increase the misery of the most underprivileged class in our society because of the weakness of some of its women? Shall we not admit to ourselves that illegitimacy is a much more complicated phenomenon, that it arises not out of the weakness of a certain women, but out of social pressures, out of sub-marginal cultures whom we have kept because of job discrimination and crowded conditions and slum living, which we have not been able to provide with honest, continuous employment, whose homes we have, in a sense, because of our economic picture, broken? Ought not the problem of illegitimacy be met by a more straightforward attack on seasonal employment, on migratory working conditions, on slum housing conditions, and the lack of honest recreation in our center cities, rather than in such rather cruel and cold-blooded punitive measures. No, I am afraid that the Newburgh program is not so much a needed reform as a rather nasty document concocted out of self-interest, tax interest. Summing up their findings on the Newburgh program, the New York State of Board on Public Welfare had this to say: "We find no justification for any of the Newburgh provisions. They are either indecent or inhuman. Some of them are illegal, and the rest of them are unnecessary." We are faced with a mystery. Why, when this program was announced, did so many throughout our nation shout Hosanna? This is needed. We have long required such a program as this. Can we answer simply by saying that Americans are cold-blooded and cold-hearted, that they have no interest in relief or in welfare? This answer is too facile, and it is not true. In this century alone, we have created a public and a voluntary welfare program second to none in the world. Agencies of help and of counsel which reach into each and every area, hamlet, and town in our nation. Americans this year will give $1.5 billion voluntarily to programs of welfare and of health. No, Americans are neither cold-blooded nor cold-hearted. How then shall we account for the Newburgh phenomenon? We can account for it, I believe, because of the emotion of fear. Because you and I, who live in a city, are afraid of the city. Our cities are troubled. Some cities, like Newburgh, are diseased. A cancer of social violence eats at their heart. Those who were born in that city and who have lived there see a rise in violence, a rise in truancy, a rise in delinquency, a rise in crime, a rise in illegitimacy. And they wonder. And they blame relief programs for all the ills of their city. Let's take Newburgh as our case. Newburgh is an old established needlework center. But since the end of the Second World War, many industries in Newburgh have relocated. Others, because of competition, have had to close their doors, and the Chamber of Commerce has not been able to induce much new industry to settle in the town. Many of the managerial class in Newburgh and most of the college-educated young people of the community have left, seeking greater opportunity elsewhere. At the same time, large number of unskilled and semi-skilled southern laborers have made Newburgh, as they have made every northern industrial center, a terminal point. They have come seeking the higher wages of the north. In the case of the Negro, job opportunity, equality of schooling, and voting rights. And realty interests in the community have seen to it that especially the in-migrant Negro group has been quarantined in the most dilapidated riverfront wards. And neither the urban renewal program, nor the schools, nor the hospitals have made a major effort to adjust their programs and their interests to the level, the lower level of economic stability and of educational motivation and preparation which these in-migrants have brought to the city. As a result, slum conditions have spawned in Newburgh. As a result, the well-to-do of Newburgh have moved outside the city limits and have tried to turn their back, at least after working hours, in the city which feeds them and gives them business. As a result, those who live in Newburgh blame the newcomer for having brought the virus of social disease to their community. And when this Newburgh plan was being considered, it was argued for privately on the basis that this was step one in Operation Go Home, that the in-migrant would learn, because of all the restrictions and the difficulties and the limitations implicit in this plan, that Newburgh had no use for them, wanted no responsibility for them, and was eager that they relocate elsewhere. Are we in Cleveland so very different? Our civic diseases are attenuated. We have made efforts towards providing adequate education for the newcomer. Urban renewal has moved apace, so have our hospital and health programs. But are there not many in Cleveland who would quite willingly adopt a local McCarran-Walters Immigration Act with all of its discriminatory clauses? The substantial white citizen is welcome, but our quota of West Virginians is filled to the year 2000. And have we too not quarantined in the most dilapidated and downridden hovels of our city, the in-migrant group, and built up the population ratios of these areas, allowed some of our more unscrupulous to gouge rent from these people? Have we not, many of us, migrated outside of the city, not only for our living, but with our interests and our talents, so much so that we have lost knowledge of, interest in, the problems and the difficulties which confront our center city? Cleveland, like Newburgh, you know, has immigration laws. In Newburgh, they must have proof of employment, the same proof that is required of an alien to the United States. In Cleveland, we do not quite require this, but we say to the in-migrant, if your job collapses within a year, there is no relief here for you. Our agencies will be happy to provide you with a one-way ticket home, but we have no funds with which to sustain you while you look here for other employment. And we, too, have not been overly generous in our relief funds. For the past year, Cleveland relief agencies have been prepared to provide families on relief only 8 cents in 10 of the basic minimum required to feed, to house, to clothe, and to hospitalize and medicate their members. 8 cents in 10, $8 in 10. $41 a week for a family of four. 80% of what is generally believed to be the barest minimum required for survival. Now, most of us are ambivalent in our relationship with the sick center city. We draw benefits from it. Many of us have businesses there. Cleveland, we proudly claim when we are outside of Cleveland, is our home. We contribute to its voluntary fund programs, such as the United Appeal. But few of us have kept abreast of its classroom needs, of its housing needs, of its relief needs. And few of us know how widespread, even in our city, the most generous city towards voluntary health agencies in the land, that how widespread has been the growth, the metastasizing of social cancer. For in our city, too, the indexes of slum living, crime and truancy and illegitimacy have been and are on the rise. What then is the solution? Is it a solution to say that it is welfare that it is at fault, that our welfare and relief programs are a scandal? What is the scandal, truly? The scandal is the gaping wounds of ignorance and illiteracy and deprivation which the in-migrant brings to us. An in-migrant who has often been a citizen of this nation, or whose family has been a citizen of this nation far longer than many of us who enjoy much more. What is the scandal? The scandal is that when these in-migrants come to our community, they are cold-shouldered. And that if employment is not readily available to them, there is no help for them to tide them over for a week, 2 weeks, a month, a year, until they can put themselves into the category of the self-supporting. What is the scandal? The scandal is that in our community, in our state, relief monies can be given only on the basis that 12% can be used for administrative procedures. So strapped are relief agencies for funds for mere subsistence that the caseworkers who are on the staff of these agencies have no time to do the minimal counseling, casework, and help which might expedite the movement of these people vocationally and personally from relief to humanity. What is the crime? The crime is that in some of our city wards, one child in four will miss up to 20 days of schooling this year because he will not have adequate clothing to meet the buffets of our northern winter, because his family receives only 80% of the funds which they need to survive. What is the scandal? Our scandal is this, that in this prosperous industrial center, only 0.1% of the unemployed are currently being retrained towards higher skills which will make them employable. What is the scandal? The scandal is that despite a widespread program of 144 voluntary health and welfare agencies, most of the activity of these agencies is middle-classed, directed towards you and me who have contributed in the name of charity towards their upkeep. And that increasingly less of our welfare funds are being spent on those who need more and more of our services. That we are allowing to develop in the marginal areas of our city families and groups of families, minorities and groups of minorities so deprived that they are building around themselves a shell of violence, and they threaten to roil the public welfare and the public safety for years and years and years to come. And what is the solution? The solution is that federal and state and local agencies alike must wage war, not on the welfare programs, but on what is lacking in our welfare programs. Current relief is simply subsistence. Food, clothing, shelter, nothing more. What is needed is counseling, retraining, rehabilitation, education for the young in classes of less than 40 and 50 children, casework, group work, recreation work. This is what is needed. This is the challenge. This is the scandal of welfare today. Will America meet these needs? Where there is leadership, the needs will be met. For America is a wealthy nation, and Americans have never been a people who have been afraid to look the seriousness of a problem square in the face and to adopt the solutions equal to the need. But if the city fathers and city leaders react as they did in Newburgh, the solution will be aggravated, not met. And if in Cleveland we continue to meet our problems in a halfway measure, meeting our United Appeal goals, but failing to realize that the goal of the United Appeal is only half of that which the welfare workers tell us is needed to meet the welfare needs of our community. We have gone halfway, 80% of the way in relief. We provide that 80%, but not subsistence. We strap the casework power of our agencies. We attack the social worker as piously sentimental when it is he alone who is walking the streets of our city, and entering the dirty hovels and slums of our city, and meeting face to face with the grim realities of poverty amidst plenty, of want amidst wealth. I am confident that Cleveland will meet its obligations. A city, according to our tradition, must be a mother, must caress, and must protect, and must encourage, and must provide. We have done this in the past. May we do so in the future. Amen.